Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. As you know, we are a health and wellness radio show. Our guests are always highly credentialed in the fields of which we are discussing. The goal of this program is to present different, sometimes opposite perspectives to allow you, the listener, to make informed decisions for the best health choice for you. I'm Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian who's been practicing for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at naturallynutritioninc.com. So, what's on the menu for tonight? It is take control of your health with direct primary care. This is going to be a great show. I'm telling you right now, if you don't know about this, you will know tonight, and you will be enlightened, I promise. But before we get into all that, you know, I got to do the business, and it's I got to remind you that while our guests are always highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on the program. Of course, you know that by now if you've been listening to us, but I have to say it. So, call-in number is 347-855-8894. We will be taking questions later on in the show. At that time, I'm going to ask you to I'll be calling out the last four digits of your telephone number. If you need to ask, if you want to ask a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions. That's 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to our Facebook page. Not our Facebook page, the blog page. It's called the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group. So join us. Please join us. Give us suggestions on what you want to hear. Tell us where you think we need to go. Tell us what you think we're doing. Give us a question on what you're listening to right now. We have a new website called thewholescoopradio.com. You'll find all the information on our guests. And I don't say this enough, but all of our shows are archived. We've been doing this now for 3.5 years. No, 3 years. All of the shows are archived. And I just sent 2 people this week back to the archives for issues that they found that were new to them now, but they were able to get information from us via the archives. So please take advantage of that. That's why we do the show. It's why I started this show, so that everybody can get good, solid, credentialed information from wonderful people. So please do that. You can also get the archives on the Blog Talk page, and that's blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop. Okay, business is out of the way. Now, who do we have tonight? You know, she's fabulous. I met her a couple of years ago, and she's just amazing. She's brilliant. She's amazing. It's Dr. Toni Muzzinigro, and we call her Dr. Muzzy. She was born and raised in Southwest Florida and graduated from the University of Florida in 2003, earning degrees in nutrition and zoology. Dr. Muzzy attended medical school at Nova Southeastern University of Osteopathic Medicine in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, graduating in 2007. She completed her family practice residency at Botsford Hospital in Farmington Hills, Michigan, and became a board-certified family practice physician in 2010. She has greatly enjoyed working in direct primary care for the past year and a half, and it has allowed her to connect with patients on a more personal level and offer them more timely and thorough care. She is passionate about empowering patients to take control of their health and the health care by way of education and relationship based on trust and mutual respect. Her professional interests include nutrition, office-based procedures, women's health, pediatrics, dermatology, and diabetes management. And usually I give out a website, but hers is under construction, so we're going to go directly with a phone number. If you want to talk with her, we'll give it to you later, too. It's 407-367-5676. And with that note, let's bring her on, say hello, and say, I am so thrilled. Dr. Muzzy, I'm so thrilled you're here. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
You know, there's so much to talk. Every show that I do, there's so much to talk about. But this one in particular, most people have never even heard of this topic. They are just maybe scratching the surface on this. So there's really, when I say there's so much to talk about, it's amazing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to give this a recap real quickly on what this is, but I think maybe you would do a better job than me. So I'm going to just throw out some things, and then don't you do me a favor and just give us an overview as to direct primary care and the reason for it. If you do that, I'll do some of the other – why don't we flip this a little bit? Why don't you do that first so that people know what we're talking about? And then I'll join in with some of the things that I've seen as it relates to pros and cons for docs and patients, and then we can start the discussion. Is that okay?
Perfect. Yeah, absolutely. So hello, everybody. My name's Toni Mazzanegra, as she mentioned. So tonight we're talking about direct primary care. For those of you who have not heard of it, it's kind of a new wave in primary care, started many years ago, but essentially what it boils down to is physicians at a certain point have been kind of controlled, or to a certain extent have been controlled by third parties because we relied on them for reimbursement, as in insurance companies. So some people have broken off over the years and thinking to themselves, hey, if I just have a monthly flat fee and I have patients who are members of my practice, I can charge them a very low monthly fee. In our case, it's around $60 a month for most adults. And I can have essentially a lower patient volume, which affords me much more time with each individual, if need be, you know, for your physical exam, for problem visits or what have you, de-incentivizing volume-based care, which is how it has trended, as everybody knows, in the insurance world, or which we call fee-for-service. Physicians, primary care physicians, have been incentivized to a greater and greater extent as the years go by, but to process through their offices more and more patients in any given day. So you have a physician who would love to be able to sit down with you, talk about all the concerns that you have, discuss medications, discuss side effects, discuss your beliefs and your background and things that all pertain very strongly to the care that they want to give you. So all physicians, when they kind of had their hopes and dreams of becoming physicians, kind of had this romantic idea of how it was going to be. And then we get into practice, and all of a sudden we find that we don't have that luxury. We have a physician who cares. We have patients who have concerns. The luxury we're missing is time, in generally, in a fee-for-service world. So, and that is due to dwindling reimbursements by third parties, essentially. And so when we cut out that third party entity and say, we have a primary care physician, we have a patient, let's keep this simple. What can I do for you today? How many different problems you have? Can we address them now? Yes. Most of the time, you know, we'll be able to spend as much time as patients need. Our initial physicals are around an hour and a half, sometimes even two. Problem visits anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour, which is a stark contrast to, in general, in family practice offices, where you have about 7 minutes to maybe 10 if you're lucky with the physician. So you may have a patient who's got a bunch of concerns, and they've waited for this appointment for maybe a month or two, and different things have popped into their mind that they want to discuss with their physician at this, you know, all important visit. And they get there and they find a doctor who is probably a little stressed out because they might have four patients in the waiting room, and obviously strapped for time. And the physician, despite that they mostly, for the most part, really want to listen and do everything that they can to help each individual patient, just does not have the time to do it. And that time is is precious, and you can't undervalue spending time with people. That's where the beauty of, you know, developing that trust and that physician-patient relationship lies. And so you find patients becoming more and more disenchanted. And oftentimes the resentment is toward their physician. Guess what? Physicians resent it just as much. You think physicians want to go into the room and interrupt you every 5 seconds and not be able to properly care for you? No, nobody's hopes and dreams, you know, led them to wanting that for their career as a physician. That's what they said. Go ahead.
I just want to make that point really clearly, because how much time does it take to get to medical school and intern? How much time does
right.
it take? You know, what's the average?
So you finish undergrad, right? That's 4 years. You go to 4 years of medical school, and then the minimum residency time is 3 years. And that's, you know, for family practice, it's a 3-year residency. And then, you know, subspecialists and whatnot, they will go on further. You could go to residency for 12 years if you really wanted to. But
okay.
Yeah, so you
so you're looking at 11, 12 years that you've dedicated. You're definitely like, yeah, I am so focused. I'm going to do this. I'm going to dedicate the next 12 years of my life to getting out, becoming, a fabulous physician and taking care of people. And you get in a system that says, no,
right.
You get 7 minutes per person. And if you only and there are consequences to not staying with that 7 minutes, correct? I'm doing this for a reason.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely. You got to be the devil's advocate. And so, yeah, I mean, patience, right? So say you have a complicated new diagnosis, right? You have a patient, you have to give her the news, she has breast cancer. And this happens time and time again in traditional family practices. And, of course, in any style of practice, physicians have to deliver news like that. So you're taking into account, you know, the psychology of it. You're taking into account their community support, what specialists they need to see, what imaging might you be able to do before they go see. So, and you can plan for that to an extent in a regular practice, but there's really no, I mean, ultimately that visit is going to require way more time than you will be allowed. And that's the bottom line. So if you're the guy in the waiting room that says, what the heck is going on? I am a busy working, you know, professional, and I have been in this waiting room for an hour. And that obviously causes an immediate disconnect. The doctor hasn't even had a chance to, like, explain themselves. The patient's in the waiting room becoming resentful, and you know, understandably so. Everybody, you know, nobody's just twiddling. Most people aren't home doing nothing. Most people have lives and responsibilities and whatnot. So that's a number one, you know, something that is already getting in the way of the relationship between the patient and the physician, because you're walking then into that next room, say an hour behind, and you're like, I'm so sorry, I'm late. And some people are understanding, and other people are like, yeah, you know, you should be, you know, they'll hassle the doctor. And I get it. You know, the doctor's not happy to be late either. Like, the doctors are some of the most anal retentive individuals and A-type individuals. And, you know, they're kind of in a system that just doesn't allow them, you know, if they want to care for each individual patient and they want to address their concerns and they want to do all these things in the way that they think is best, then you can't have your cake and eat it too. You know, something's got to give. And so
right.
that's where
also,
there
are also consequences from the insurance industry if you don't stick to the reimbursement or general management
right.
of the office, because you have
so
to see many people. You mentioned it earlier, the quota-based system. And I'm going to throw this out because I would. Just so everybody understands, on an average traditional doctor practice, it's about 2,500 to 4,000 patients on an average in an average practice, and that's
exactly.
small. That's small. So if you've got, you know, you might be one of a couple of physicians, but if you do the math on that, that's a lot of people to see per day. So what is that, about about the 20, 25 people a day, more on average,
Exactly. Yeah, so, they say you see like one out of every 100 per day. So exactly. So around 25 patients in a day. If we had 50-hour days, we'd be cool. You know?
Right, exactly. So then you get 7 minutes per person. And when somebody goes to the doctor, they're there because they don't really want to be there, but they know they have to be there. So it's really important for them to hear from you, the doc, as to what's going on with them. And if they've had to sit there for an hour or wait for you, they get their 7 minutes. And they've got, you know, they've got all these things going on in their head, because I'm going to give you the patient perspective. You already know this. But, I got all these things going on in my head. I got to say this. I got to say that. I got to tell them. And you get 7 minutes, and it's like you get out of there going, I forgot. I totally forgot.
Or you get, you have patients feeling like I have nerve asking the doctor these questions, and they don't have time. Doctors don't have time. But then they leave, you know, with questions unanswered, and they're kind of hitting themselves like, crap, why didn't I ask? This is very important. Right. And then try calling the next day to ask the question, and you may or may not get a call back. You know, it's just kind of the way that it is.
Very frustrating for everyone involved, and the only people that are actually benefiting from that particular program, or if you will, are the people who reimburse everybody, because then the other side of that is you can only do so much, right? You can only, if people don't fit into a certain box on your sheets, then you can't take the route where you think they might really need to go, correct?
Well, right. I mean, so in the fee-for-service world, if you are dealing with such a time restriction, doctors can be fairly creative if they are given a chance and the time, right? And sometimes when they're so burnt out because they've been running on the rat wheel for so long, they may, you know, not even have the mental energy, you know, and they definitely don't have the time. So that's where you see a very low threshold for referrals to specialists, which obviously drives the overall cost of healthcare up. You know, most primary care docs can go further than they actually do in a fee-for-service world in the way of, say, working up a new problem or what have you, which, of course, would be a more cost-effective route, you know, just by accessing different resources, you know, resources online and reading research articles and just medical references. We read the same references that specialists do. You know, I am in no way, you know, subspecialized in anything, but I am, you know, able to access a lot of the information. So if it's something I can take one or two steps further, and if I can solve the problem in that one or two steps, great. And if not, somebody sure may need to see specialists, but how great is it that you have a primary care doc that actually has the time, you know, and energy, because they're not burnt out, you know, on the whole process, to take your hand and walk you through maybe the next couple steps, as opposed to your nose is running, ENT, you know, you have a bowel problem, go see GI. I mean, and listen, I've been there. I worked in that system for 7 years, you know, before transitioning over to MyDirectMD, and I'm absolutely not faulting any of my primary care docs. I have been there. I have, you know, tried my
best.
That's not
this conversation.
Cannot.
Yeah, you're right. We're not faulting any of them.
Everybody
in this system is a victim of the system, from the patient to the physician and everyone in between that has to deal with all the stuff that happens in between. We're all victims of what has been outlined as the protocol for healthcare.
Right.
So
we talk on this show
a lot about having to ask questions, and it's okay to ask questions of your physician, because you have to, because you're also helping your physician, because they can't possibly remember everything that's happened with that particular person, because they're seeing so many people every single day, all day long, and they and everybody starts run together a little bit, because, you know, if you have one diabetic, you've got 20 diabetics maybe for the
And on top of that, if you've got GI problems, then out of those 20 diabetics, they're diabetic and 10 of them have GI problems. And then the next time you come in 3 months later for a follow-up, you say, hey, I'm the one with the diabetes and the GI problem. You go, yeah, so, you know, get in line, you know. And what makes you unique? Well, you have to say it. You have to, you know. So we talk a lot on this program about having to ask questions, and it's okay to do that. But that's why, because there's an entire system and infrastructure to healthcare that people just don't know about. So why I spent so much time on this tonight is because now, given that, and you said it well, you're running the rat wheel, you know, right. And everybody is, but you guys more so than the rest of us, because you're the ones that have to spearhead everything for everyone, and we aren't even going to talk about liability tonight. But we will,
right,
at another point. So given all of that, what I'm reading about direct primary care, what I'm seeing happening, and I'm seeing about half of the states right now just with major pop-ups to direct primary care models coming up everywhere, people, meaning physicians, are just tired of playing that game. They want to treat people. They want, you know, you guys, mm-hmm. you went to school for 12 years. You didn't come out of school going, I want to just zoom on by somebody and not focus on them. So,
physicians,
so this gives you an opportunity to do that, right? So tell us about why this is, and then I'm gonna hit some pros and cons that I was able to read about. We could talk about those a little bit, but tell me why now, just why this is so much better for you, and how this works better for everyone, given the fact that you know they're out of that whole game kind of thing.
Yeah,
because that's really what it is. It's kind of like a shell game.
Right. So from the provider or physician standpoint, it's a night and day difference, right? So all of us are seeking fulfillment in our lives, right? You want to feel like you've done good in whatever it is that we do, right? And so me, when I was working in the standard model, you know, like I could catch those like glimpses where I could really feel like I could connect with people. But in general, I felt like I was just drowning and just trying to, you know, turn the cream into butter fast enough so I wouldn't sink. But it was kind of a losing proposition. So, you know, I in practicing in this model, the other thing is, there is really something to be said, like I said, about just being able to spend time with people. And I probably spend too much time right now. Our volume, my patient panel hasn't completely filled up. So the extra time that I have, just patients that I have. But if somebody has a problem 2 months after they have met you, and when they met you, they didn't really feel the love per se. They didn't feel like you got a feeling for who they were. You know, their chance of really kind of trusting your recommendations at that point are not as good, right? And so a big part of I think why it's so fulfilling for me is because I'm really happy to be able to just get to know people, and everybody's just so different. You know, what Joe might like, Phyllis might never ever want to consider, you know, treatment wise. So, but, you know, I feel truly like people feel that I know them. And so that, it just helps build trust. And it's something that is integral in the physician-patient relationship. And of course, you know, there's just a lot more autonomy, right? So I've worked for large hospital systems where my pay as a physician has been deducted based on certain benchmarks that they set. So one of the benchmarks was you have to have X amount of your patients who are in this category on statin drugs. Well, I have no problem with statins. I use them in select patients. But listen, some people don't want to take statins or any other drug, right? And that's everybody's prerogative, right? You can take or not take what I'm recommending. You know, just because I recommended it, that doesn't, like, put it in some kind of a, you know, a steel tablet set in stone or anything like that. So my reimbursement or my compensation as a physician has been withheld by administration, you know, due to, say, I didn't meet this benchmark, not enough patients were on a statin this year or whatever. So that's because they get paid by
I'm gonna interject on that one too, because I'm gonna bring that into a different kind of focus for an individual focus. I happen to, you know someone who was, and I'm going to use the statin drug because you're right. There's controversy over the statin drug for
mm-hmm.
people who, like, done some research and they say, it's not for me. And then there are other people who
right.
just say, well, my sister gave it to me and said I need it. Well, in one particular case that I dealt with specifically, person became debilitated, literally debilitated, could not walk,
sure.
ended up in a wheelchair. Then, you know, progressed out of that to a walker, but still isn't right. And it directly correlated when she started taking the statin
sure,
drug
yeah.
and then put off the statin drug. But she went back to her doctor because she said to me, I said, let me see the meds that you're on. I asked her why she was on it because I didn't see a diagnosis for it. And she said, I don't
mm-hmm.
know. My doctor gave it to me. So she goes back to the doc, and the doc says, well, you know, they told me that for people your age, I should have so
right.
many, I should have people your age on the statin drug, so I gave it to you. And so she went through
yep.
a major life-changing event that she's still not right because of what you just said.
Yeah, that sounds
because,
devastating.
Yeah, you guys are, your backs are against the wall, and people don't realize that you have to do certain things in order to meet the quotas for the insurance companies, or
right,
else you get
right.
penalized. And
right,
and
exactly.
You,
yeah, you meet with the administrators every 3 months, and they'll slap you on the wrist and make you feel like you're not doing a good job. You know.
Right, and I know physicians that have actually gotten fired from practices because they didn't meet the quotas like for 3 months in a row.
Right.
And we're not talking like, you know, they were so far down the line that they just weren't doing the job. They were just listening to their patients and going, hey, you know what, instead of the 25, I did 20. And that's how it came out, you know. So it
right.
really takes away, the system takes away your ability as a physician to actually be a physician for your patients.
Exactly. You know, you just have people who, you know, some, and of course I don't agree with this either, but some people say I never want to have a mammogram. You know, that's their
right.
prerogative, you know, and
right.
you know, you have to say I recommended it and document, but if they don't want to do it, they don't want to do it. You create this antagonistic relationship between a physician and a patient when the physician's going to be penalized, right, and you know, God forbid, fired because or shamed, you know, by the administration or whatever, because not
right.
enough patients chose to do this. That's not what any of us are in this for. You know, patients should be
no.
able to say no to any, you know, intervention or screening. It is what it is. You know,
and
we
don't
always
find that
you
spend
know,
more time
find...
with a patient. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
I was just
going to
say,
go ahead.
As time passes, we do, of course, unfortunately, realize sometimes that things that were considered standard 1 year or decade are, you know, looked back upon, you know, laughingly, like, I can't believe we used to do that, right? And we do the best we can in the moment, but still nothing's perfect. Like you said, that the example about the statin, I feel terrible for that individual. That's obviously a very extreme example of a terrible adverse effect. Very rare, I would also say. And of course, the, you know, having a massive heart attack and you know, could obviously be devastating. And so secondary prevention, I'm still a proponent, nevertheless. But you never know what's going to be available 10 years from now that doesn't have even a glimmer of that potential for adverse effect. And we'll look back and say, oh, man, you know, we prescribed that stuff and it, you know, caused this or that. So nothing's perfect. You know, we're practicing and we do the best we can in the moment with the information that we have. And patients are allowed to say no because we're not perfect. We know as much as we know.
Right.
You know, but we can't know everything. But anyway, go on.
No, so I mean that's a point well taken, because what I was going to say earlier was simply that now if we move over to the direct primary care model, and you are spending more time with that person who may have refused a mammogram, and they get to know you and they get to trust your abilities as a physician because they see how much hard work you do and how much research goes into everything that you suggest, then they might even be more apt to having that mammogram and understanding why.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
A 7-minute visit isn't going to do it, because you just popped in and popped out, said you need a mammogram. You go, oh, no, I'm not doing that. Okay, later then, see ya. And then you write it down and say, nope, refused. Okay, fine, see ya.
Yeah. Right. You hope you get to this point where, like, Dr. Muzzy knows me. She doesn't want to do this for any ulterior motive. She truly just cares about me. You know, you hope you get to that point with people, and it's hard to get to that point without time, you know, without time to spend with people. So
now let's just walk through for 1 second. You know what? I'm going to just do the business here. I got to just remind people what they're listening to. So give me a minute, because I want to do something a little different here when we come back in a second, okay?
Yeah, sure.
You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, and welcome back. We're just talking with Dr. Muzzy tonight about taking control of your own health with direct primary care. I am Carol Ferraci, your host, and call-in number is 347-855-8894. If you want to ask a question, press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions. And I'm going to say that you can also go to the Facebook Blog Talk page, the Whole Scoop Blog Talk Radio Group, and ask away. I know we've got some questions on the blog already, so I'm not seeing anybody that wants to ask a question by telephone, so if you're shy, don't be shy. We're not going to beat you up, so please press the number 1 and we'll go from there. So anyway, we're back. Dr. Muzzy, you want to give your phone number out one more time?
Yes, sure. So our office phone number is 407-367-5676. And our website is being renovated as we speak, but www.mydirectmd.com should be up, I imagine, in the next couple days.
Fabulous. So, okay, so we got all that out of the way. Thank you. What I want to do is I want to give people an opportunity to kind of experience direct primary care through the two of us tonight. So I'm going to be your patient, okay?
This just sounds good.
You know how my brain works? I'm going to be your patient. All right, I walk in for the first time. I'm paying you a monthly fee, correct? And you said earlier it's, $80?
Yep. So $60 for the average adult, so up to age 44, $80 for patients 45 to 64, and over 65 is $110 per month with a small registration fee. I think it's like $65.
Okay. So I would be in the $110 group, and so now what happens? I'm walking into you for the first time, and this is the reason that I'm coming to you. I'm coming to you, I haven't even gotten any health reasons yet, but I'm coming to you because I'm in that population with the individual health care plan that's about to possibly go away or shoot up so high that I'm never going to be able to afford it. So is this a good alternative? And so I'm thinking it is a good alternative for me. And I'm thinking that maybe I can actually have someone at least keep tabs on me at this point and help to prevent certain things. So I'm coming to you. So now what can I expect, or should I expect that, and is that reasonable?
So all good questions. So you're a patient over 65. So, yeah, I mean, if
no, not
you don't 65, qualify for Medicare.
Know. Okay.
I know you're not, my love, but so so for 65 and up is $110. So adults who are 45 to 64 would be 80, and adults up to age 44 would be 60. So if we're talking about any adult, right? So if you do not have any coverage, then absolutely yes, we are a great resource, because while we are not insurance in any way, you are essentially ensuring that your primary care needs can be met, right? So generally speaking, that's about 80% of patients' care. I generally don't recommend going bare, you know, without anything, you know, God forbid something
right.
catastrophic happen, or you need a surgery, hospitalizations, and expensive subspecialist procedures and such. So ideally, you would do a direct primary care plus something, right? Whether that something is a high deductible catastrophic plan, whether you decide, you know, in the old terminology, to go instead of from a platinum plan where you're paying $600 a month for an individual down to a bronze, right? Because you're hoping, you're betting that you're not going to need to meet your high deductible in the year, right? So then you're just paying, you're filling that gap of your, you know, say your deductible is $10,000. Well, if you pay X amount a month for primary care, at least you know that you're that part of your of the gap is met, right? So then you know, or if you have regular insurance, say money is not an issue for you, you have Cadillac insurance, but you just have the disposable income that affords you, you know, something like what we do, just as an added benefit, so that when you're sick, you can call and be seen the same day, so that, you know, you can reach your doctor after hours for concerns via text, so that you can Skype your doctor from your desk at work, you know, rather than having to lose half the day in the office, so that when you come to the office, you probably won't wait very much, you know. So all of those things, you know, plus we dispense generic drugs in our office, so we buy wholesale medications with a very small markup. Essentially, you should find like 95% of our medications would be cheaper than what you could find anywhere else. So for example, I think I saw a gentleman earlier today or yesterday who was taking atorvastatin. And I know we already discussed the discourse surrounding statin topic, but regardless, just for an example, he was paying $200 per 3 months for that medication. We sold it to him today or yesterday, 10 cents a pill. So his 3 month supply of atorvastatin was $9, right?
Wow.
And so it's kind of mind blowing when you see, you know, the disparity. And so, you know, even like Walmart, they have a great $4 list that has really saved a lot of uninsured patients, but their markup on a lot of that stuff is still like, you know, hundreds of percent, you know, it's like the drug might cost like a penny a pill and you're paying $4 for what cost them 30 cents, you know?
Right.
And like Flexeril is a pretty standard muscle relaxer we might use if you throw your back out or something like that. So for 30 of them, it's 93 cents out of our dispensary. We draw labs in the office. We have cash based contract with Quest. So for example, a hemoglobin A1C, which I use routinely to screen for diabetes, $4.50. A thyroid blood test is $5.50. A complete blood count is around $5. A complete metabolic panel is something like $3.50, right? So an entire panel, you know, which includes some other more detailed cholesterol tests and plus vitamin D. So those two are probably the most expensive of what I would standardly order, but it's all less than $100 for, you know, when it all is added up, you know, for your physical. Whereas if you were just a cash paying patient, going to have blood work done at Quest, the prices that you would be charged would easily be at least 3, maybe 4 times that, right? Or could even be more. So that, we also have cash-based contract with area imaging centers. So if you're a member of our practice and you need a CAT scan, it's $250 as opposed to, say, $1,250, or an MRI might be $275 or $300, just depending on the part of the body. X-rays are $35. You know, so this stuff is thankfully, more and more places are becoming a little bit more in tune with the fact that so many people are becoming uninsured or just are uninsured, and that, like, cash is king, right? If you just pay $35 for the X-ray now, they don't have to worry about billing somebody on the back end and paying the biller and all that stuff. You know, so it's beneficial for them as well, you know, in that regard. And so a lot of people are sort of starting to trend toward that way. But for the most part, unless you've got, you know, you're part of one of the, you know, a practice that has these prices negotiated, you're going to be paying essentially the same rate, you know, as they bill to the insurance company, which is usually pretty exorbitant.
And I point that people need to understand that the insurance companies get billed higher amounts than what the actual cost. Than not just necessarily you would just bill cost. You might mark it up some for an individual paying for something as opposed to the insurance company, which is not supposed to happen, but it happens all
the
time.
It's bananas. I said it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah,
the markup.
And it's true. And I'll tell you from a firsthand situation where I had a mammogram done where I chose to pay for it myself. They were having a special. This one place has a special every year for breast cancer. And so I think it's October, the month of October, they charge for mammograms like $35 or something. And I didn't want to run it through my insurance company because the last time I had run it, there was a problem with, you know, you're not really a provider, this is wrong, and they billed me $350. And Yeah, I just had to get it all straightened out, so I paid for it myself. Well, then I get a bill in the mail for the balance. I'm like, what balance? You know, there shouldn't have been a balance. And they're like, no, there's a balance on the back end here. And I'm like, no, there really isn't. And see,
you
know, because
like,
I know.
You're killing me.
What's that?
You're like, you people are killing me.
Yeah, right. So because I know these things and because I know that they really can't, like, do this whole back end thing, it is what they say it is. And it's not, there's no additional back end stuff. You know, and I was able to just call them out on it and say, no, that's not going to happen. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to fix your books because there is no back end fee. I'm not paying you anymore. You charged me what you charged me. I already paid you. We're done.
But
don't know that. They just get the second bill and they go, huh, I didn't realize it was going to be more than that. And then they pay them. So
exactly. You're
right.
Yeah.
This model is. Please, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. No, I lost what you were just starting to say. I apologize.
I was going to let you talk because it's your show.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, just as, you know, just so people know, there are certain insurance plans that don't particularly pair well with direct primary care. You know, if you're in an HMO that assigns you a primary care physician that's in network, if you were to, you know, somehow become a patient of our practice and I tried to order something for you, your insurance company would not pay for it. And mind you, we have the cash-based pricing, but for imaging and things that are more expensive, sometimes if people have already met their deductible, they do like to go through their insurance, right? You know, and so plus if you needed to see a specialist, they need their, you know, referral actually to be coming from the primary that is on your HMO insurance card. So in those cases, you know, it's just not the greatest fit. I mean, some direct primary care docs do see patients who have an HMO and they bounce them back to the other primary care doc if they need to refer them out, which I guess is fine, but it's kind of a little, I don't know. It's just inconvenient, obviously, for the patient. But I don't know, maybe you could argue the convenience of what we do might outweigh that intermittent inconvenience, but I think it's just good for people to know. Plus, there are certain Medicare plans even that function as HMOs. So if you have an HMO plan, you know, I would hate for a patient to sign up and then realize that, you know, after the fact, like, oh no, you know, you can't refer me, you know, you're not allowed to do my referral. No, because I am not actually right now, you know, I'm not in network for anybody essentially. So, which it works just fine most of the time, but there are a few people who have that type of insurance where they need the primary that's in network to dictate, you know, everything that they do. So,
I think you just answered like four of the blog questions. If she didn't answer your questions as you asked them, blog back in and let us know. But you know, one of them was, do you take insurance? The other one was, I have a high deductible plan. Does that work? You know, I think we talked about that. There is one here, though, that I did, when I was just trying to do a little research for this show, I did come across this, so maybe you can help us out with this. It's funny that this question just came up. It said, I have a high deductible insurance plan, and my coworker informed me last week that I'm not eligible for direct primary care. And then they said something, and it actually says something about the IRS. I did come across this with research, and I didn't understand it except that the IRS is, and tell me, what I read was the IRS was saying that it's an insurance program, and I don't know how they can get an insurance program out of direct primary care, but that's how they're classifying it.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure if that person is referring to something like an FSA or HSA account. Historically, direct primary care membership has been excluded from what you're allowed to use an HSA for, although I will say that this is up for new legislation, although I don't think it has passed yet. So that sounds to me like somebody who has a high deductible and maybe has like a health savings account, and direct primary care, you can't use the HSA funds. As far as I understand, and this may be a better question for my managing partner / the owner of the practice who kind of stays up on all of that. But as far as I know, you have not historically been able to apply HSA funds to your direct primary care membership fee. So
okay.
Maybe.
I think the gist of that is we probably need more information on that particular question to see, and then probably direct to another person.
Yeah, I think if that individual, that was somebody who posted a question on your blog, if they could just call our office and ask to speak with the managing partner, he could probably clear that up.
We have a couple of minutes left. You see, the time goes really fast on this show, doesn't it?
It sure does.
it really does. The direct primary care, though, all the entanglements that we were talking about, you know, the back end pay and all of that, it all goes away with direct primary care. What you get is what you're told you get. You know, there's no surprises, right?
Right.
And then the benefits. I mean. Okay, so you're paying for everything, but you're paying a whole lot less. So, like, for me, as an individual, I pay almost $400 a month with a high deductible. And I can't use the plan because it's a high deductible. I'm going to pay for everything anyway. And I'm not going to get the kind of prices that I will get with you because, you know, I would be in a different class because it would be part of the traditional model. So any way you look at it, it's going to cost me a whole lot more than paying you $80 a month and then whatever tests I need. at your cost. So, and that would absolutely, you know, cover the essential health care benefits that the politicians want to take away. Well, that's a different show as well. But, you know, if we just define the essential health care benefits of basics of prescription medications, and mammograms, all the preventative stuff, you know, all the stuff that we're just used to doing on an annual basis are considered essential health care benefits that may or may not be covered in the new legislation that's coming out. Doesn't look like they want to cover them. So if that's the case, then direct primary care allows you to have that at a most affordable cost, correct? Is that how I'm reading all this?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are several direct primary care physicians, particularly one out of Kansas who I call the godfather, who's very outspoken, and he's sat with different politicians and had probably exhaustive conversations. And from all the buzz that I get, we as a movement in direct primary care are making headway. People in, you know, in policymaking positions seem to really think it makes sense and that it, you know, might work very well and might drive the cost of healthcare down. And so, you know, we'll all have to kind of stay tuned to see what happens, you know, with policy. But it's looking, you know, for the most part, like people dig it. You know, it just makes sense. So
yeah, it does.
We'll see.
It really does.
We'll see.
But the thing that is also, like, you know, we can talk about all the logistics of that, but the biggest thing that people really need to take away, if you don't take anything else away from this show as it relates to direct primary care, all the things that we just talked about, the biggest thing is you get to actually sit down with your doctor. You get to actually let your doctor know who you are, and you get to know each other in the scenario. So now, when your doctor is recommending for you, they're actually recommending for you and not your diagnoses and the little platelet that you fall into, so that, you know, it's a little algorithm you know, if you have this, then you must go here and you must have this, just like the Stanton drugs. We're going to pick on those all night. You know, so if have X, number, X diagnosis, you're going to get a Stanton drug. But in your case, if you're talking to somebody, like if you're talking to somebody like me and you recommend a Stanton drug to me, you're going to know better than to even try that, because you will
know
me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, exactly. you know, you have to know your audience, that's just part of the deal. I am in between, right? I know the data. I know people. Right, or I try to know people, and so I do my best to kind of do what I can to optimize each individual. But I get it, you know. You want to tell me no?
Right.
Cool, we can still be friends, and when we'll move on, and you know,
it's alternatives. You'll find another route if they need you. And the biggest thing, the other big point I want to make is, If you're sitting down with me and I am your patient tonight, I get to ask you questions and I get to say, hey, you know what? What about this? What about that? Well, you know, I don't think that one really works for me because I have every side effect known to man whenever I'm on a prescription medication. And if you think that 1 out of 1 million people will have that side effect, chances are I'm that one. So given that, what can we do at this point in time? And I'm just using that as an example. I'm actually using my father as an example. Because my father has every single side effect known to man. He's going to, not necessarily every one for every prescription med, but that 1 in a million side effect he's going to have. So we have to be very, very careful prescription meds that he's on, because he will react. We know it. So, but if we had a doc. But if we had a doc who knew him, who took the time to know him, who sat down with him and said, you know, Nick, I really think you need this. But knowing your history, I'm afraid to give it to you, so we're going to try it this way. Imagine what that would be like in today's world.
Yeah, right? Like,
no, because it doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen. It's like, no. My father is going to be 91 years old this year. And 2 years, well, a year or so ago, he had some edema. He had some fluid buildup, and his cardiologist recommended 40 milligrams of Lasix. Not thinking, we gave him the 40 milligrams of Lasix. His blood pressure runs low to begin with, So. He's in Pittsburgh. I'm in Florida. Luckily, the caretaker had gone back that night, said, I don't like the way your dad looks, calls me, and we do all kinds of things to get his blood pressure. I said, check his blood pressure. It's lower than low. He's checking out. And so we do all kinds of things. I'm like, you know, try this, try that. She's doing it. My poor mom is sitting there going, you know, not knowing what to do. I knew he would never make an ambulance. I knew he'd never make it to the hospital, so it was up to us. So I'm like having him eat salt, you know, like pretend it's a tequila shot and chase it with salt. So you're going to do the chaser first, you know? So get your feet up in the air. Luckily, we have an adjustable bed. We did all that, you know. We gave him water. We did all kinds of stuff. So we got his blood pressure back up, and he was feeling much better. And I wasn't sure if he was going to make it through the night. And it was exactly the reason that I'm saying this, in that, you know, his cardiologist is a great guy, and he's a really fine cardiologist, understanding that my father will react and not taking into account that he has pressure to begin with really could have been detrimental.
Right. Oh, yeah, I got you for sure.
Yeah. So it would be refreshing. Yeah. So everybody, it would be refreshing to do this. And we need to get the word out that direct primary care is here and that it is an option. It's a great option. Now, we only have a couple minutes left, so let's just take, there's one other question. It's like, what if I need extensive services? And I'm assuming that kind of means like kind of what you covered earlier. You might need to take a catastrophic health care plan out so there's something terrible happens.
Yeah, I mean, because what we do is primary care, right? We do our very best to handle issues in-house and delay or prevent you needing to see a specialist. But, you know, the fact of the matter is sometimes you just will. And obviously that's not what we do. And so that's why I don't really recommend going totally bare, ideally. I mean, some people don't have a choice. Some people just truly can't afford anything. And if they're going to afford anything, it should be probably their primary care, right? But ideally you have something to back you up. But yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of different stipulations, but people who foresee needing a lot of specialist care may not want to go too catastrophic. You know, if they're already seeing three or four specialists that they foresee continuing to need, I would absolutely not recommend, you know, not having insurance and doing primary care, right? Although, pretty soon here we will have a technology that allows us to kind of get consultations from specialists through an internet platform called Rubicon, which, you know, it would allow me as a primary care physician to give a case presentation to a specialist that may be in another state, give them all the labs and imaging and everything. And, you know, so they don't get to do a physical exam on the patient, but sometimes, you know, you just need, like, what's our next step? What's my next move, right? So that's kind of down the pipe as we grow. But as of right now, we don't have that yet. But things like that are, you know, kind of innovative things that a lot of direct primary care practices incorporate to try to drive the cost of healthcare down. Because then if you're doing that, the patient's not, you know, that's kind of inherent in the cost of the membership. So.
Right. Fabulous. Is there anything that we missed tonight that you wanted to cover?
You know, I think you pretty much hit it all. I really appreciate you having me on the show and you bringing light to what we do. And, of course, we appreciate all that you do. You know, and nutrition is the foundation for health, you know, as everybody knows. So you can't overstate the work that you do. But yeah, so thanks a lot for having me.
Oh no, we're gonna. I know what I'm gonna get from this show, and so I just have to ask, will you come back?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Perfect.
All day on hand.
There's your answer, everybody. So don't even ask me, okay? She's going to come back. We'll figure out when. we're going to say thank you
disappear
very
into
much.
The ether.
You really appreciate you being here, your time. You gave us some fabulous information, and it's just it's a matter of putting it all together. But I think what you accomplished tonight was letting people know that there's hope, because there's a lot of people out there that are in despair right now because they don't know what's going to happen. And
right.
They don't know if they're going to have coverage. But, you know, getting the word out for something like this, it gives people hope. And so thank you very much for I think the timing is perfect on this.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much for looking out for the listeners.
We're going to do that. We're going to have you back. I'm working on a forum here to do some of the business of healthcare, and so maybe you might be interested in helping us out with that.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
And I'll let you know more details on that, and we'll see if it works out with your schedule, but you would be a fabulous person to have with that. So we'll just keep that
in
mind.
Great.
Everybody, we're going to be back in 2 weeks. And Dr. Bump is coming back for his third part of the three-part series, where we just finished up internal inflammation and all the inflammatory, not all of them, we can never do all of them, but we did two parts on inflammation and chronic illness. So he's going to come back in 2 weeks, and we're actually going to switch gears here, and we're going to talk about Alzheimer's and dementia and prevention and all kinds of things. So join us again, and that will be on the 22nd. And so the 22nd, 7 p.m., join us again. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for blogging in those questions. And those of you who were shy tonight that didn't want to talk on the phone, that's okay. We did a lot of talking, so you have an opportunity to talk some more. So that's all good. So thanks again, everybody, and we're going to say goodnight, and we'll see you the next time. Dr. Muzzy, take care, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Good night and be well, everybody.
Thanks.